Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of July 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And I'll tell you all about my talk today with the manager out at the Boyle Terminal that belongs to Southwest Grain, about 80 miles from the state border. That's the western border in North Dakota. They have one of the lowest cash grain bids for corn in the nation. They're $1.66 under. $1.94 is their bid for the day. We'll hear more about that as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check these Wednesday afternoon numbers from the CME Group. The settlement price is like this. September wheat for the soft red at $5.30¾, up 6¼. December at $5.54½, 5¾ higher. Hard red at $6.23½ in the lead option. September up 2¼. Corn futures were up 2¼ cents in the September, $3.62½ on its settlement price. December at $3.70¾, up 2½ in the March. $3.82½, 2¼ higher. May corn, $3.90¼, up a penny and three quarters. July, $3.97½, up 1½. And December of next year, $4.10¾ cents, up 2½ cents. August soybeans, $12 a penny, up 17. September at $11 a penny and three quarters, 16¾ higher. And November beans, $10.76½ a bushel, 18¾ cents higher. January futures up 18 at $10.83¾. March soybeans at $10.90¾, up 17. And the November of 2015 at $10.78, up 8¼ cents. Bean meal at $3.91.50, $9.70 higher. Bean oil at $36.20, 27 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures in the August at $156 and a nickel up a dime. October at $158, 12½ cents higher. August feeder cattle for the day at $217.25, up $1.22½. In September, $218.40, $1.62½ higher. And lean hogs on the day down the $3 limit at $124.57½. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Let's take a look at the outside markets at this hour. Futures are trading the nearby crude oil at September, 103¾ cents. That's 64 cents higher for a gallon. The RBOB gasoline at $2.86¼. That's a penny and 8 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $2.10¼ cents. A penny higher for the day, and the difference between the two is 76¼ cents wide. That's 2¼ cents narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.76¾, down 9¼ cents, and diesel fuel at 2¼ cents higher for the day at $2.87½. Gold futures at $1,304.70 an ounce, down $1.60, and the U.S. dollar trading at 80.82. That's up 0.04 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service per the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies. A high of 78 degrees on a north wind at about 15 miles per hour for the afternoon. And then this evening, mostly clear with a low of 53. Again, north winds at 8 to 15, gusting to 21. Sunny skies tomorrow and 76 degrees with the north wind at 6 to 8. And Thursday night, clear, a low of 55. Northeast winds by then at 6 miles an hour. A 30% chance of showers. Some thunderstorms after 2 in the afternoon Friday. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies and a high of 70 degrees. The winds will turn then to the south at 3 to 8 miles an hour. Friday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy and 66. And Saturday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms continues. Partly sunny and a high of 85. Saturday night, thunderstorms and showers, cloudy and 68. Sunday, more showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny otherwise, and 84 degrees Sunday night. More rainfall, partly cloudy and 64. And on Monday, more chance of showers, mostly sunny otherwise, and 76 degrees to start the work week. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. He, of course, is in Kansas City.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. It is the 23rd day of July. On the phone line with us to take a look at the marketplace is Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Ted.
Let's start with things that are happening in the marketplace and maybe in the outside area, because some things have happened in the last 24 hours in Argentina. What's going on there?
Well, you know, there's been this ongoing argument with the bondholders who they've been hanging on for the last 13 years now, since 2001, when Argentina defaulted on $100 billion in debt. And so as of today, there's a judge in Manhattan says you have to negotiate 24/7, because otherwise we're going to have the second debt default in 13 years is going to come Argentina again, and the bondholders... you know, Argentina wants them to take even less money than what they promised to give them, and Argentina's calling the bondholders vultures. You know, the impact, of course, is going to hurt the Argentinian people, especially the peso would go to pieces. You know, that's why people have been hoarding U.S. dollars. But the other thing that it could do for us is it could flood those large stocks of grain into the marketplace also. You know, that's the one thing they've been holding on to. You know, they just haven't been selling any grain for fear of what may happen. So this is supposed to be settled by July 30th. It's not looking very good at this stage of the game, but we just have to keep it in the back of our mind. It is a big thing out there looming over us.
So it's something that could flood the market with corn and soybeans, or just soybeans?
No, corn and soybeans. They're sitting at about, I believe, 20% of their corn and about 60% of their beans yet. And so it would be more negative to beans, I think, than it would be to corn. But it wouldn't help us, no matter how you look at it.
How do you see, speaking of corn and beans, condition in the United States?
Well, I'll tell you what. It is pretty amazing when you look at the 18 major states. For corn, we had 9.3% of the acres below trend, 20.9% at trend, and 61% of the acres above trend. I think that's a record, especially for this time of year. Now, in beans, we have 9% below trend, 33.4% at trend, and 51.3% above trend. And if you remember last week, it was like 62% above trend. Ohio and South Dakota declined back to the trend line, but it still leaves us with almost 85% of the acres at trend line or above. Doesn't bear well for prices, let's put it that way.
Well, you're not building a good case to go higher or even sideways, I don't think.
No, I'm not doing a good job, am I? You know,
if we look out west,
just the facts,
yeah,
you know?
If we look west, they've been dry. Do we find any reason to move higher there?
Well, I think when you look at the general picture, there's a couple things going on there. The driest states that came back this week were, topsoil-wise, were Kentucky, Kansas, Nebraska, North Carolina, Missouri. We all know that they have a certain level of ability in every one of those states and some majors to use irrigation. The one thing I thought that was interesting coming out was the reservoir levels came out, and they said the level in 85% of the U.S. reservoirs right now is only at 26% of capacity. That was as of the 17th of July. Last year was at 42%, and the 10-year average is 30. So, you know, those reservoirs are what provide irrigation water. So, you know, we are already under some issues, although I did talk to some of my guys in Nebraska today, and they were getting a beautiful rain again today. So, you know, that's been a godsend, all the rain that they have actually got on the west. But the highest topsoil moisture states were Illinois, Iowa, North Dakota, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Wisconsin. And so, you know, we can probably endure a little longer without getting some extremely significant rains, but all of us, I think, are saying, we could use a little rain.
Speaking of Nebraska, and I'm wondering what your clientele are telling you, I had a faxed question yesterday afternoon to me from Oscar, who listens, of course, online. He's in Nebraska. Wanted to know about the acreage report from USDA, the June 30th report, and why it showed the numbers it did. He is a seed dealer and a farmer both. And suspects that many people had been, based on what he's hearing from truckers and other dealers in that part of the world, I suppose, turning back in seed, both for corn and beans, and seems to think that USDA's numbers might be high. Asked why that might be the case. Now, I ran this number, this question by Daryl Good, and I've got a note into Lance Honig, who is at USDA, and he's the chief of the crops branch out there, and he and I'll talk probably, I think, tomorrow morning or later this afternoon. The answer shortly to the question is that USDA surveys for that particular report, and it's what you have planted and what you still intend to plant at the time that they survey, so that's what they captured. And then as Daryl Good wrote me back, he said, don't forget that as the FSA numbers roll in, that they may change the acreage, although that really won't happen until they see all the numbers, and normally that gets updated in the October crop production number. So the question for you is, when you talk to your clients to the west of us, meaning western Iowa, parts of Nebraska, maybe parts of Minnesota, the Dakotas, do you hear that they did not put nearly as much in the ground as they thought they were going to?
I definitely have heard that comment. I think the thing we have to look at on that USDA report was that they did make it very clear there was still 2.1 million acres of corn to be planted and 11.4 million acres of beans, you know, and I think 6.5 million of that was actually double crop beans. We've increased some of that out in Nebraska and in Kansas both. We really don't know where we're at from that standpoint. That's one thing that will help with this next USDA survey. They're going to start their field surveys probably on the 24th of this month, and they're going to do objective yields, you know, basically based on ears, pods, and heads. But at the same time, they're going to interview these farm operators to update acreage, you know, and they're going to ask about probable yield, too. So last year, they actually were on the ground, talked 24,000 different operators were actually interviewed, and they won't change the production number on the August report, but they can certainly change the harvested acre number, and that's usually where we get our first hint as to what's going on. But I think when you look at, you got to really dig deep into that acreage report to find the spots where they tell you, yes, we're telling you what the intentions were, but we still had 2 million acres of corn to go. We still had 11 million acres of beans to go. So we're not saying to you, this is a concrete number. We're saying to you, this is what the intentions were.
But I think, as you've told us in the past, once you do the multiplication, you still have a record bumper-sized corn crop.
Well, you certainly can. I mean, I know that a friend of mine came out last week, you know, saying 171 bushels to the acre. Well, you take away 2 million acres of corn. Let's say we didn't plant that corn, and it's mostly in the north. We know that. And adjust your harvested acres to the normal. Well, USDA was using 91.5%. You do that, you still get a 14 billion bushel crop. And, you know, people forget that when you remove lower bushels out of the overall national average, it raises the national average. So we're going to pick some of that up just simply because we lose acres in areas that have lower production numbers. And so it's going to be interesting. But, you know, USDA does kind of take a hit a lot of times. And it's just because you've got to really dig into those numbers to be able to see what they're truly saying to you.
Hey, a different set of numbers that I want to dig into that would be related to the United States, the RFS, advanced biofuels, and Brazil, Mato Grosso, ethanol production there, because those can come in, those gallons can come as advanced fuel, and we might see that happen again, I suppose, in the not-so-distant future if the RFS isn't changed very much, which most people are thinking about. But their cost of production remains fairly high down there compared to what their price for corn might be, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Remember, we talked a little bit last week about this, you know, that the farmers down there, especially out of Mato Grosso, were going to the government and begging for them to basically raise the subsidy so that they don't lose money. The corn price since April has dropped from $4.13 U.S. down to $2.05 a bushel U.S. as of this week. And, you know, their cost of production is $3 to $3.50 U.S. And so the government subsidy is only guaranteed in at $2.80. And, you know, this makes them really subject to some pretty hard times. Estimates are saying that basically about maybe 25 to 28% of that new crop is sold. So, you know, they haven't planned very well, let's put it that way. But on the flip side, and when you start to talk about the RFS, that lower corn price is a good thing for any new corn ethanol plants, which we know they've been building down there. And they have actually retrofitted some of the sugarcane plants so that they can actually use corn when the sugar cane isn't available. So, you know, if you look at the impact on imports or on exports for us, you know, we didn't, basically in 2013, we didn't import anything from Brazil indirectly or directly for the first time in 21 years. Okay, so they become a little more, we've become more stable, and we haven't had to do that. At the very same time, you know, the growth in our ethanol, or the expectation a lot of guys have to see this corn price go higher, is thinking we're going to have an absolute drive up again in the, you know, in the ethanol demand. If it does happen, it certainly doesn't appear to be coming out of Brazil. And so this could possibly impact, you know, the Brazilian corn acres too for 14-15. There's no doubt. You're going to plant acres. If you know you're going to lose money right out the gate, probably not. But at the very same time, they are sitting on way too much old crop yet too. And so it's a double-edged sword. Not a good thing, you know. And if you look here in the U.S., you want to make a comparison. What are our guys doing? You know, today there was a Reuters story out there, I think Dave and I talked about this morning, but they're buying up these poly bags, and they're going to bag corn, is yep. what they're going to do. So, just a really interesting situation we're building into here if we do end up with a big crop.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Jackie Vex, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. She's from right here in Champaign County. Joins us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets and the commodities each and every Wednesday afternoon. You can hear her again on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Speaking of those poly bags, I know Dave Dickey will talk about those in his newscast. And that one's coming up next.
In agricultural news, five employees of a company accused of selling expired beef and chicken to McDonald's, KFC, and other restaurants were detained by Chinese police today after an official said illegal activity was an organized effort by the supplier. The Shanghai Food and Drug Administration says the food safety violations at Shanghai Husai Food Company were company-led. The company is owned by Aurora-based OSI Group Incorporated and supplies companies like McDonald's and Yum! Brands in China. A spokeswoman for OSI Group did not immediately respond to requests for comment today. The scandal surrounding Husai has alarmed Chinese diners and disrupted operations for fast food chains. A Shanghai broadcaster reported Sunday that Husai repackaged old beef and chicken and put new expiration dates on them. It said they were sold to McDonald's, KFC, and Pizza Hut restaurants. The government of Brazil plans to make nearly $1 billion in incentives available to small and medium-sized organic food producers as a way of helping meet increased consumer demand. Among other things, the government plans to buy organic food products at guaranteed premium prices from family farmers who hold organic certificates. Among other factors driving the decision was a push by Brazil's food retailers, represented by the Brazilian Association of Supermarkets, who charged that the government was not doing nearly enough to promote organic food. Meanwhile, in the U.S., USDA has announced that it plans to spend $13 million per year for organic cost share assistance programs that will pay up for 75% of a producer's organic certificate costs. Many U.S. farmers will have a powerful new tool, giant sausage-shaped storage bags, to help them avoid the lowest prices in years and gain more control over trade with giants such as Cargill and Monsanto. Demand has surged this summer for the white polyethylene bags the length of a football field and the equipment required to fill them. They allow farmers to store millions of bushels of corn and soybeans at a fraction of the cost of conventional silos and far more efficiently than leaving the grain in the open air. The bags, which are about 300 feet long and 10 feet in diameter, are common in Argentina. The bags may be a sign that farmers will not be rushed into dumping their harvests quickly this fall. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, this morning I called and talked with Jim Bob from Southwest Grain's Boyle Terminal. That's near Taylor, North Dakota, about 80 miles from the state line on I-94. That's on the western side of North Dakota. Their corn bid today, $1.94. The basis is $1.66 under. I asked Jim why, and his answer was really simple. They don't actually buy corn. They put up a bid to keep the local ethanol plant honest because farmers asked Southwest Grain to do so. The ethanol plant, by the way, is $1.30 under. It operates, that is, Southwest Grain, a dozen elevators in the area to deal with wheat. The Boyle Terminal loads shuttle trains at the rate, get this, of 2 a week, and you'd think the thing would be huge. It's not, exactly. 2.7 million bushels in storage. They turn it twice a month. The average wheat farmer, Jim told me, has more than 100% farm storage in their area, and that's why the elevator turns over so often. He said, and I quote him, "I bet our land values are a tenth of yours." He was right. They're about $1,200 an acre. Still, I was looking at the charts for Boyle. Over the last 3 years, it's been 50 under, not a buck 66 under for corn. So what happened? Well, farmers raise 50 bushel wheat there and 85 to 110 bushel corn. However, and this one sounds really familiar, and I'll quote Jim, "Farmers like to plant corn. He thinks they'll need to double production over time, and he says it'll happen." So there's your story as to why corn is priced at $1.94 in Taylor, North Dakota. Well, let's see if we can hunt down a little better bid. Pete Peterson is on the phone line. He is at the Anderson's facility, the Claimers, near Logansport, Indiana, this afternoon to talk with us about their basis levels. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
Great.
Well, tell me first, what are your bids for the day and what's basis look like?
Let's see. Cash bid right now, we're at 355, and fall we're at 347. Basis has been getting a little bit sloppy lately. Corn's starting to move. Guys are starting to maybe throwing the towel a little bit. Quality problems. A little bit of heating in bends. But right now, with the board doing what it's doing, it just seems like pretty depressing. And like I said, new crop is pending, and got to make room for that.
You suppose demand at the Gulf will start to tighten basis up or not?
It very well could, in short term, I do believe, but, once again, you got a little bit of logistical problems with the rail. It could be affecting that, but I think in general, that has potential.
All right. Hey, Pete, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thank
That's
you.
Pete Peterson. He is at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. We'll be back here on the Closing Market Report for this 23rd day of July. Just a couple minutes, and we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Vanilla Ice Cream Day. It's also St. Focus a Gardener Day, patron of farmers and gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, St. Thomas Brisbane was born. Brisbane conducted a number of experiments in growing Virginia tobacco, Georgia cotton, Brazilian coffee, and New Zealand flax. All were colossal failures. Brisbane was far better known for his study of the southern sky. In 1875, Isaac Singer died. An English inventor, he was best known for his continuous stitch sewing machine. By 1861, Singer was chief of the world's largest sewing machine manufacturing company. By the way, Singer spent millions of dollars on advertising, and he made purchases possible by offering installment credit. In 1876, Joseph Rogers Brown died. An American manufacturer, he invented a precision gear cutter that produced a universal milling machine. In 1903, the first Ford Model A was sold. It featured a twin-cylinder internal combustion engine designed by then little-known Michigan machinist Henry Ford. And in 1904, by some accounts, the ice cream cone was invented at the St. Louis World's Fair. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated always joins us. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
I'm good. Hope you're enjoying the weather today.
I am. And you know what? It was cool this morning when I walked out of the house. I think the wind was maybe out of the north, northwest a little bit. Felt really good. Is that the start of something different for us again, meaning cooler temperatures?
Yeah. You know, this. I'm beginning to be haunted by the terminology that the Europeans used to talk about, you know, the year without the summer or whatever it was they're always talking about, where it was cool all year long. Of course, we've had some warmth. Certainly this doesn't come close to that. But, yes, we are getting ready to go back into some more chilly weather, and it looks like for the next week we're probably going to see quite a bit of it. We've got two surges of cold coming into the area. The first one's already out there, and that's what you're feeling. There will be a reinforcing shot of cooler air that will show up as we go into the latter part of the weekend and the early part of next week, and that will dominate the entire work week next week. So we're getting a little taste of the cooler conditions here today and tomorrow perhaps, but it will be a lot more chilly across the region as we go through the work week next week. There will be a short-term bout of warming in between. And some of those western Corn Belt areas that got up over 100 degrees yesterday, we'll probably see one more opportunity for that kind of heat out that way, and then they too will cool down with this event next week. What's interesting, this pattern is going to still be with us going into the middle of August. In other words, we'll warm up again in that first week of August, and then we'll have another round of cooling that will occur around mid-month. And so after that, I think things will start changing. We'll see some summer weather at the end of August and into September. So definitely an interesting pattern we're in right now. We are going to dry out the southwestern parts of the Corn Belt additionally. That's the one area that I think we need to keep an eye on. There may be some yield stress and a little bit of loss in production perhaps in some of those areas if everything comes together as suggested. It may be cool, but it's not necessarily going to rain a lot in those areas.
At least for a portion of the Midwest, it sounds like really good growing conditions for corn. Soybeans, maybe not so much, but that heat at the end of August might be just what they would be hankering for then, I would think.
Absolutely. From a soybean perspective in the central and eastern parts of the Midwest, that is true. But for those areas in Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, southwest Iowa, those areas there, some of those beans will already be stressed because they're not doing well with moisture right now. And I think these cool air masses will come into those areas relatively dry. So we'll probably continue to dry down the soil in those areas. And so when the heat and the dryness gets exacerbated later in August, it might have a little more of a negative impact, but only in that area. All these other areas in the Midwest that have plenty of moisture around and have actually been a little chilly here recently and will obviously be that way again for a while. Certainly a last-minute blast of warmer temperatures will certainly help to finish out the crop in a very favorable way.
Hey, Drew, thanks so much.
All right, you have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Helps us wrap it up. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.